Hi everyone, welcome to the timingresearch.com crowd forecast news, episode number 286 for January 4th, 2021, our first episode of the new year. And we are recording this at 1 p.m. Eastern time. My name is David Cosmeter. I'm the creator of timingresearch.com. And today I have the option professor here to talk about what he's seeing for the new year and his outlook for the week and what's going on. So I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to him.
Okay. Thank you very much, David. Again, optionprofessor.com is the website, and optionprofessor at Gmail is the way to send an email question in. We're getting very big moves on the downside today. Our weekly newsletter that we have, a quick background on ourselves, by the way, we've given seminars on the options market for decades, and we've also educated thousands upon thousands of people on the uses and the risks of options, both for speculative purposes and hedging purposes. And so obviously, if you have any questions on that, you could always shoot us an email, optionprofessor@gmail.com. We have a weekly market update that comes out free of charge. I'll get into that at the end of the broadcast. But the headline this week was stock market, binary week ahead, big choices, read on. And obviously, we're getting a very binary event here today. And the reason is, it comes down to the virus very much spiking up. And we've got the Georgia elections tomorrow. And we've got Trump in town trying to reverse the election despite 59 losses in his lawsuits. So there's a lot of nonsense out there. And then there's a lot of serious stuff on who's going to control the Senate. And then, of course, there's a lot of very serious stuff on the health of the nation with regards to the virus. At any rate, and you have some pretty big names like Carl Icahn and Byron Wien talking about a significant correction coming at some point, and obviously that the market's at a very stretched point. I heard a guy from JP Morgan discussing the concept of a pause to refresh here. So obviously, with that kind of a backdrop and this kind of news cycle, you're getting people getting out of Dodge. Also, a lot of people didn't want to maybe take gains at the end of last year because they'd have to pay tax. So now they're taking some gains now, and they deferred the tax for an additional 12 months because they waited till the calendar year switched over. A lot of factors like that going on here today. Let's go through the numbers here. The charts are right in front of you. I'm going to start out with long-term charts so you get an idea of the long-term trend, and then I'm going to shorten it up to see what the turn today has done technically to the shorter-term graphs. As you can see on the 20-year graph, the S&P 500 is in very good shape as far as the trend is concerned. But anybody who knows anything can see that it's very extended from its moving averages. That is what reversion to the mean is all about. Obviously, in January, February of this year, we were way above the averages. Not only did it revert to the mean, but it broke the means. Same thing back in 2018. We were way away from the mean, and we came back down to the mean. So will we come down towards the high point of the mean, which is 3250, or the intermediate term of 3114, or the very long term of 2986? You would think that we could get somewhere close to the first one, which is 3114. But there is a lot of pent-up demand to buy. There is a lot of problems with regards to nowhere to go with your money. And so 3400 might be the worst case scenario, which is the former high. But anyway, looking for some type of pause to refresh before a more significant move does not seem like a bad idea. Today, I'll show you why there could be a situation where it would bounce out of the lows today. So this is the 20-year graph. You go to the five-year graph, it's less time frame, but you'll still see that it's fairly overdone. And you can see these moving averages come in at 3,600, which is obviously some big support because that's where it bottomed out on about a month or two ago. And then basically underneath that, the moving average comes in at around 3,500. And then underneath that, you got your 3,350 ballpark area. So 3,350 to 3,500 ballpark should be where the thing holds on any kind of a drop, okay? If we're going to maintain the trend, which looks like it's clearly going up, and every day it's above that blue line is another day where that line is going to continue to grow. As you can see, when the moving averages are rising and the market's above it, it's a nice little market to be involved in. You got the big break here in 2018. Remember the 25% break because rates were rising? Also, you got a divergence. You see this here is a high point, and you see that's a high point on the RSI, and you see this new high was very much a lower RSI. Here, we've got not a dissimilar situation. We had a high here, and the RSI peaked out somewhere here at around 75, and now we've made a big new high, and the RSI seems to have peaked at 61. So when you get a divergence like that, you've got to be concerned that a very significant drop could be happening soon. That's what we've been telling people, and that's why we are suggesting people understand how hedging tactics work. Hedging tactics include doing covered call writing, underwriting for a limited hedge. Then you're looking at collars, where you sell the calls and take the premium and buy the puts. That's the second hedge. The third hedge would be a married put, where you just buy a put so that you have the right to sell it. But if the market keeps rising, you're still in the stock. Now, the final way of hedging that we talk about is replacement trades. Let's say you bought this thing down here in 2000 and 2800 and 2000 and 3100 and 3500. And now you're way up here. And you might think 3800 is going to be about it. So what do? You take your money off the table up here and you replace it with a call spread of, say, 3800, 3900. And now if it goes up to 3900, you've got a position at 3800 for a fraction of the money of what you took out of the market. And if it has a big correction, the only thing you lose is the call spread. And you are obviously going to have a bunch of cash to put back to work on a correction. So if you have questions on that, the best thing to do is shoot an email over to optionprofessor@gmail.com, and we'll try to help you with the use and the risk of that type of tactic. And then basically, at least you'll understand about the tactic. Now, whether it's appropriate for you or not, that's something you, your broker, and your brokerage firm will discuss. At any rate, that's the things that we've been talking about here on the opening, is either hedging with calls, collars, married puts, or hedging with replacement trades. And people who are electing to do that have a lot less risk on the table than the people who are just hoping that this thing stops, which it could do, but it might not. Let's turn into a smaller area, which is the six-month graph. And on the six-month graph, you can see it's hitting the moving average right now. So the low today is very important. If it holds, it could bounce out of here. And the low today is 35.652. So 36.52 coincides with that low there. And it also coincides with the blue line, which has not been broken ever since we had the correction back, I think, in September, right? Is that September?
No, October.
So September, we had a correction. It broke. October, it had a correction. It broke. And it's been on the bicycle ever since the 1st of November. So anyhow, that's what it looks like now. Big correction today, coming down into some support. If it closes underneath 3650, then obviously 3600 would be your next hope that it would stop. But more than likely, it would indicate that we might be in for a more significant correction. Again, there has been divergences between the new high and the prices. And so again, you have to be careful up here. Let's turn to some other things that you guys watch as well. QQQs, what are they telling us? Oh, I did want to go back. Let me go back, because I stopped at the six-month chart. I want to show you the damage that today's action is on the shorter-term graphs. On the three-month graph, you've broken down, and the RSI is right at 50. So again, you want it to stop at 36.50 too. There you go. So that it can hold that 50 number on the RSI. Because if it doesn't hold that 50 number on the RSI, that means we could be in for a more significant drop. You can see, after it got above 50 on the RSI in the beginning of November, it's been smooth sailing to the upside. So you don't want it under 50, and that's why we're at crunch time in that 3650 number. The 1 month is not, that's the ones, the 1 month and in are the ones that are getting really whacked. That's a total break of the short term, and that's a total break of the RSI. Okay. A little bit oversold on a short term basis, like it was down here. So it might snap back. But again, it could have trouble right here at 3730 on the snapback. And on the 5 day, that obviously probably has been whacked pretty good as well. So you got your sell signal on the 5 day up here at 3750 earlier today. So if you're following it on a short term basis, you had it cross over here. That's your first sell signal at 37.70. Now you got another one at 37.60, and you got another sell here at 37.50. So obviously those are three good sells, and down here it is trying to make a turn and maybe try to fill in some of that gap. So a couple of things that would make you somewhat constructive between now and the end of the day would be what? That you held 36.50. That's a good thing. That you're oversold basis the short-term stuff, which is a good thing. And, you know, that obviously the market is going to be bouncing back and forth. One thing that also told us that today you could start rolling over is, though the market was opening up in the beginning of the day, it also had an VIX that was rising. And a VIX that is rising during a advance in the market sometimes is a bad sign. And today it certainly was. So let me show you the VIX real quick, and then we'll hop over to some other stuff. DVOE. Oh, we'll just look at the VIX future here just to get a flavor. And that's a big breakout on a short-term basis on the VIX from 26 all the way up here. This is on a VIX future. Looking at the 1 month, is it back in an upward trend? trend? Yes. On a 3-month upward trend? Yes. 6-month upward trend? Yes. 1-year upward trend? Looks like it. So if we get a further drop and it breaks 3650 and 3600 on the S&P, you would assume it might take out the 32 number and there could be some real hairy action coming forward. Not yet. But again, if this is a 1-2-3 formation, 1 to 32, back down to 26, don't take out the lows. And now you take out 32 on the VIX. That means the selling could be rather precipitous. There's a lot of real estate between our prices of 36, 3700 and 3800 and where those moving averages are. So, you know, and the bullishness out there, I mean, every Tom, Dick and Harry is telling you 4,500 this year. And everyone is also telling you that every dip has to be bought. So with that uniformity of opinion, you know, if things were to change on the news front, on the virus, on the vaccine, the political situation, you know, there's more than enough reasons why you could get quite a bit of people trying to come out. And, you know, when everybody wants to come out and the bids aren't there, that's how you gap down. Okay, let's look at the QQQs now for those of you guys. And then we'll look at some of the stocks, you know, the FANGs, stuff like that. Give you a little rounding of what's happening out there. Okay, so here you go. Let's go to a 20-year basis so you get an idea of how overbought the NASDAQ is. And that's pretty overbought. So, you know, when you get 50% above the 200-day average on this thing here, you're very extended. And when you're very extended, sometimes you come back in. Yields are rising because obviously the dollar's dropping, the metals are running, which I'll get to later. So yields are rising, which is going to possibly compress some of the valuations. And we all know that the valuations on tech is extremely high. So that makes it a bit vulnerable. So that's a reason why, you know, these things could still make money as far as being profitable, but they could have problems with their valuations if interest rates were to rise, which they're rising now. Okay. So there you go on a 20-year basis. Let's move it in on a 5-year basis. And you're looking at 272. Okay. And so basically, now what's that RSI doing here? See if we got any divergence. Yeah. Again, check it out. This high on the RSI was up at 80. This high up here on the RSI was 70. This high on the RSI, where it currently is, 67. So again, you're making a lot of highs and the RSI is not making much highs. That's a divergence and that's sometimes problematic. So be careful of that. Let's look at a 6-month basis coming down towards the line. The line comes in at 300, 302. So you don't want this thing breaking under 300. And then basically on a 3-month basis, same area. 1-month basis, broke when it broke under 311. Actually, when it broke under 312. Short term. 5-day, give you a sell signal up here at 313. Still looks a little bit bad. And on a day chart, yeah, it's starting to try to make a turn a little bit. Yeah, got to stay above here. But, you know, these lines are all on the negative right now. So it would imagine that there is some selling above if the thing does have the chance to rally. Let's look at some of the more popular stocks you guys keep an eye on. Nope, that's not it. Agilent. AAPL. There you go. Let's try Apple. Now, in our weekly update, we told you that the move up to 137 because it was splitting was not going to last, and it certainly didn't. And we thought anywhere around 100 would be a good place to re-enter. It hit 103. So we've been pretty good with the Apple. And let's look at Apple at all different angles here for you. Yeah, it looks like a double top up there around 140, doesn't it? And let's look at the RSI. Yeah, the RSI diverging, right? You have a high up here on the RSI at 83. Got a brand new high on the stock, but the RSI is down at 70. That's a divergence. And that's sometimes when you come in and fill some of these gaps. So will we come all the way down to the 103, 100 area? Under certain circumstances, but at least I would say that you would have to be thinking that if the whole board is going to correct, Apple will not be immune. Again, still on a long-term basis, very good. But, you know, look at that versus the moving averages. That's pretty extended. Okay, looking at the 5-year. 5-year graph, still good, but the average comes in more like at about 100. And this thing hasn't broken since it got above it. So that's a pretty good number to keep an eye on. And that comes in at 107. All right. And then we'll go to the short-term stuff and see what that looks like. Still holding on. 124 is the support there on a 1-month basis. There it broke when it got underneath, starting at 135, it told you to get selling. And when it got under 132, some more. On a 5-day, you real short-term traders out there got a kind of a sell signal, same area, 132, 135, ballpark right up here. And on a day graph, is it turning around? And on a day graph, it is trying to turn around. Love to see it stay above 128 right now and try to get these lines pointing the other way. But it is definitely on the defensive. But again, longer term, very bullish, but a lot of real estate between the current prices and the moving averages. Let's look at Facebook. Tremendous amount of eyeballs every day, billions, right? And let's look at them on a long-term basis. Yep, 200 is the number down here. Still looking pretty good though. RSI above 50, so that's still good. Let's go bring it into a 5-year, see what it looks like. Yep, so right now, you know, like I say, it's still looking good. You'd like it to stay above this number, 255 ballpark. And then on a 6-month, bring it into the shorter term stuff. Starting to look negative, breaking down a bit. 275 looks like resistance. Again, 275 looks like resistance. 1 month. Yep, 276, 275 is resistance, and the RSI on a short-term basis has broken underneath 50. So on a short-term basis, this thing's also on the defensive. Facebook, I'm at Amazon. Amazon, getting hit pretty good today. Let's look at a 20-year, give you an idea what kind of growth there's been here. Absolutely ridiculous. But boy, that's interesting on the RSI here, huh? Your RSI here was up at what? 89, 90, and that was in 2018 before the big drop. And then here we're way up there at 3,600, and the RSI is down here at 83 versus and 90. So you are getting a divergence there that I think is pretty interesting. So if this entire board is going to correct, you know, again, these guys are not going to be immune. Longer term graphs, obviously, be a lovely purchase around 2,800 if you can get it. Let's look at the shorter term. Yeah, it's on the verge right here. So this 3,100 area, you know, 3,150 area, you don't really want to get taken out if you're bullish. Yeah, right now, again, 3150, 3160, you'd like to stay above there. And here it gave you the sell signal at around 3300. So from this standpoint, you know, when it broke the first one, that gave you a little sell signal confirmed by breaking the intermediate and longer term graph. 5-day basis, definitely went selling at 3,300. And on a 1-day, are we trying to turn around? Yeah, just like everything else, trying to get some boat legs, but it's got a lot of negative momentum right now. All right, let's look at Microsoft, MAGA. All right, Microsoft, let's pull it back, pull the lens back on a long-term graph here. You know, obviously a fantastic company, but is it overdone? Well, it looks overdone technically. Whether it's overdone realistically, we'll find out. Again, you got a big divergence on RSI from where we were. And you're looking at the 5-year graph coming in around 210 or 205. You don't want it under 205. Yep, and it's already starting to give it up a little bit here. So, again, where's RSI here on a 1-year basis? Is it still above 50, hopefully? Oh, it looks like it's getting underneath it. So, could there be a big correction in Microsoft? I don't know. Looks like the RSI is pointing down, and it looks like the market's trying to break 215. If it breaks under 210, 205, that could accelerate. Got it broke down here on the 6-month, broke down here on the 3, very much broken down on the short term. RSI well under 50. And on the 1-day, is it trying to turn around for the day? It's like everything else, just holding on to dear life with the first moving average, right? Still got plenty of resistance above. So Microsoft, again, good company long term, as you can see, but again, deteriorating a bit, and deterioration could turn into a gallop if it gets a little bit weaker. If it can hold the 205, 215 area like it is in this ballpark now, then it remains, you know, pretty constructive. Let's see here. Netflix, and we'll close it out with Google. All right, here you go. Long-term basis on Netflix. Again, you know, very, very, very up there versus where the moving averages are. Let's turn a look at the 1-year. Constructive still, as long as it stays above that 500 number. RSI is pointing down, but it's holding above 50. So again, a lot of these stocks, if they can stop going down here, you know, this is just a little minor correction. If they go much further down, then it opens the door to a more significant correction, maybe to the tune of that 5 to 15%. That people were talking about. So bottom line is we're getting a drop here to fill in some of this real estate between the moving averages and the stock. Let's look on a short-term basis what it looks like. Hanging in there on the 3-month. And like everything else, broken down on the 1-month. Trying to make a turn in the beginning of the day. For the end of the day, just like everything else, barely above the red line and trying to see what goes on. Hey, let's close it out with Google here. Alphabet. Okay, so Google again getting hit pretty good. But again, this is one of the better valuations and, you know, reasonably good story, and so a lot of people do think this is quite good. Again, moving averages at 1500 on the short term and 1300 on the longer term. Looking at the 1-year, yeah, again, it's starting to look a little bit dodgy. If it breaks under 1700 here, looks like it could keep going pretty well, and that's on a 6-month basis. Again, they've got antitrust issues, and I think maybe people are going to dump it because of those issues. If it breaks under 1700, that wouldn't be very good. As a matter of fact, it could accelerate to the downside if that happens. So again, Google starting to look a little dodgy, maybe having problems like Facebook with the regulators and things like that. How about these flyers that have been going nuts, these stay-at-home things? Peloton, get a little smattering of those so you can get an idea. Yeah, Peloton on a one-year basis. Yeah, moving average way down here at 125 or so. You're way up here still at 170. RSI probably diverged. Yeah, I mean, you're up here and then you're up here with that much more action. Looking at it on a three-month basis, still looks okay, but overbought, trying to fill it in. On a real short-term basis, monthly, yeah, it broke down under 155, actually 160, 155, gave you the sell signals. On a five-day basis, if you're real short-term trading, obviously got a sell signal there. And is it trying to turn around off the lows like everything else, trying to grasp at that first moving average? Stock looks good, but really looks like a 120 area would be a much better place to be biting than where we are now. Unless, of course, it's going to stop and then just basically go back up. Looking towards Zoom. And today, what we're doing here is we're sharing with you our opinions and our observations. Obviously, many people have different opinions and different observations. So this is our best guess on things. Zoom, let's go back to the one-year graph. And it has rolled over from that 600 number. And you can see the blue line's controlling it now, right? Couldn't get above it and stay. Couldn't get above it and stay. So right now, 400 is a big number for Zoom. You got back above 400, I'd find it interesting. If in fact it can't, then you've got to be more concerned that it may go down and fill these gaps between 300 and change or whatever. But yeah, definitely it has rolled over and there is resistance. You know, if you can get above 400 and stay there, get these lines to get back above each other and start looking like this, Zoom is much more interesting. But the valuation, as you all know, is off the charts. Let's go around the horn here. And okay, let's just give you like a Berkshire Hathaway, because that'll give you a little bit more of a value kind of deal. And let's see what value looks like today, because some people are thinking it's going to take a timeout. It had a big run. And you see it had a very big run here from 195 up to 235. And this is a market that looks like it's trying to maybe have a break. And so you fail to take out that high. You really don't want it under 220. So if it got under 220, this gap looks like almost for sure it would get filled. And if it did fill that, a 200 to 210 might not be a bad place to rethink this thing. The RSI is pointing down and right at 50. So again, if it can hold, you're okay. But if it goes any more deterioration through this area here, you know, you would think it's going to try to fill that gap in. So value very much on a long-term basis, because let me show you the 20-year here. See, this thing is not that far above its 52-week high. This is why value is interesting to ourselves and many people and have been, because most of these value things pay 2-3% interest dividend or better. Same thing with energy and banking stocks. So you can get a decent yield and you're not that extended. So when they say value is a better deal than some of the other ones, it's because it's just taking out its 52-week high now, all right, or very rarely near it. And again, most of these other ones on tech are way, way ahead, way up. So obviously, that's why people think, and we think, value is the better place to be, because we like to get dividends on our money while we're watching, and hopefully that principal will rise dramatically, because most of the value stuff is really a reopening stuff. And that's why it had a good bounce, but that's why it's slowing down, because you got the virus causing a lot of problems and people are rethinking the time frame on the reload of the economy. So that's why you're there. And that's why you're looking at that kind of situation with regards to a stall, maybe a pullback. And then and then from that point on, you know, maybe then you can get going pretty good. Just give you a couple of banks. Let's see what's going on with the cheapest of the cheap here, which is Wells Fargo, something we thought looked like a pretty good value at 22, having trouble at 30, but it still has a lot of potential if it gets moving. And again, they're trying to get their problems behind them and they're trying to cut costs and things like this. So we find this company a little bit interesting. But the main ones that people like are Citigroup because of the price to book. And that one is going for, you know, that they're all coming off. Again, value is coming off and consolidating, which is not a bad thing. It allows you to dollar cost average into it, and it allows you to continue to accumulate something that we believe has a very big future to it and pays reasonable dividends. Energy has a little bounce to it going on because of the OPEC is meeting. Russia would like to hike. The other guys want to keep everything the same. And so this is another one that pays good dividends, and it is a ETF. But the ones that are involved here, you know, the ones that are involved in generally all of them are your Chevrons, your Exxons, your ConocoPhillips, your Phillips Petroleum, your Valeros, your Schlumbergers, those kind of guys. Okay. You want to look at CVX. They've really supported their dividend, and people, you know, are confident that they're going to continue to do that. So if that's the case, this thing pays a very high yield. And basically, you can see that it's still got plenty of room to come back up. I mean, this is where it dropped from, 130. You're still getting it at a heck of a discount. It is above the first average, which is 85.57. Well, it's a little bit underneath it. But if you're a believer in energy looking forward, then you'd probably be a believer that this may go back up as well. Looking at a one-month graph, let's see what that looks like. See, on the short term, get this thing above 86. That wouldn't be a bad deal. On a three-month basis, again, getting it back above here would be a good deal. But if you're a believer in the energy sector, again, they do have a reasonable dividend being paid. They could cut them at any time, but they are paying them now. And again, there seems to be some value to the energy because everyone is so negative on it. With regards to small caps, I'll show you. This is a Vanguard ETF on value. And again, you know, these are the ones that people are looking at because they haven't blown out their new highs by a tremendous amount. See, that's the 52-week high there, and it's just up towards that. Whereas on the tech and everything, it's way above last year's highs, way above. So that's what makes people think there's value here. So this is above 50, which is a good thing. It's above the moving averages. It may have more wood to chop, but again, this would be one for small cap values that might be interesting, and I think the dividend's over 2% on it. Now you've got mid cap on value. And on mid cap on value, you're looking at, again, same story, back above the averages, but not way above last year's high. So there's potential there. So again, on any kind of consolidation or pullback, to get these lines above here, you'd obviously love to have it stay above 107, 105, right? Stay above 107, 105. So on any kind of a dip, 10% dip, you know, you might want to start accumulating that. If you're a believer, that value will come back. And if you like to get some dividend income while you're holding it. Mega cap value, and again, same story. So again, you've got not making brand new highs, starting to turn up above the averages, and it pays a good dividend. Another one in that same genre that pays a high yield dividend. And if you want to play individual stocks, you could look at the top 10 holdings of some of these ETFs and then start picking out of some of their holdings. And if you think that they are in the right stocks, you could obviously use that in research to see how you feel about those. Then you got, again, same thing here. This thing pays over 3% dividend distribution. And then basically you're looking at something that has not taken out its high yet. Maybe it'll consolidate more, but as long as it can stay above 85 or 80, you know, you would think it's okay. And again, you're getting paid to hold on to it because it issues a dividend. There's an international high yield, which gives you a bunch of international exposure. Excuse me. And you're looking there. It's actually up today. So there you go. It's up today on a big, big down day. It's trading above most of its averages here. Let's take a look. Hasn't really made a new 52-week high, though. There's your 52-week high over there. Upper 64 neighborhood. You're still trading 61. Blue line looks pretty good. Comes in around 60, not too far off the current price. And I think this thing pays over 3% distribution. So what's so bad about that? And let's see. So that gives you a little bit of an idea of some of the value areas when people are talking about value, where you can get some dividend income and hold on to an asset that has not blown out its highs already. So ergo, if we have a reopening at some point, they may be able to benefit from that. That's the whole concept of the value versus growth, I think. But a few different ways to play it. Internationally, you've got emerging markets. And again, a weaker dollar is good for international. And that's why the emerging markets have been growing. There's your one-year graph. You got the buy signal here at 34 and you're just holding on. It's still rising, right? So there's your international emerging market. They say Europe is very cheap. They say their banks are cheap and their stock valuations are much cheaper than ours. And that's why people are buying into it. So there's Europe. And there you go with VGK. That's an example. These are examples of what ETFs are out there. And then you've got a situation where it's obviously been on the bicycle ever since it got above 52. So that's something to look at there. If you're looking for something that has like Asia, Japan, things like that in it, you got the Pacific. And the Pacific is not doing as well. Nikkei was down today, but it has been doing pretty good. And then you got stuff like BABA. Now, what's going on with BABA? I mean, that stock, every Tom, Dick, and Harry was in it above $300. And now it looks like, here's one Boeing, but we'll get into that that later. Boeing, ba ba. There you go. And there you go on Baba, down hard again today. RSI looks terrible. And if you go back on the longer-term graph, 5 years, you'll see that it broke the long-term averages. That's not good. And then if you go to the 20-year, you can see that 200 is an area where it might hold, because you see it's been holding that number all the way. So if you like Baba, start looking around that 200 to 210 area and see if it's going to hold at that point. RSI right now on that long-term graph is right at 50. So again, if you're a Baba fan and you have dry powder, you might want to look at that. Now, with the market down so much, some people like to look at put writing. What is put writing? Well, put writing is where you sell a put, and that means you agree to buy the stock at the strike price until the expiration date. And of course, you get to keep the premium. So the bottom line is, I don't know what these options are going for. I don't have the screen right in front of me, but I'm going to just do a theoretical, hypothetical example. And let's say you went out 90 days and you looked at the 210 put right now, and let's say it was $15. You have the, if you sell that put, you're going to get $15 in this example, and you have the obligation to buy at 210 minus the $15 you received, or you'd have to come up with 195. So 195 would be your line in the sand. Now, if it drops and you want to buy the option back at a loss, you can do that. And then you have no obligation. You just have the loss of the differential between what you sold the put for and what you bought it back for. But, you know, some people do think that selling puts in a market like this, where you have a threshold where you think it will hold and you like the company long term, that this is a strategy that makes a lot of sense, because when the market's dropping $6 and it's dropped from 320 down to 220, obviously the puts should be a little bit expensive, because the implied volatility from this drop is pretty high. I can't tell you it is or not, because I don't have the puts in front of me. But this is a strategy that people might want to investigate while these prices are down. But realize, when you sell a put, you're contracting to buy stock, and you have to have the money to buy it. And after you buy it, if it goes lower than your cost basis, you're going to lose money. And that's the story. So the bottom line, though, is that's what makes that strategy interesting now, because the price, you're agreeing to buy the stock after a drop, and you're agreeing to get a premium that should be pretty juicy. So a juicy premium and a price that's lower than it has been is attractive to some investors. And so put writing on Baba with something to investigate currently, because of the situation that it's in. Of course, we haven't seen Jack Ma in months, so Lord knows what happened to him. And there is a lot of, obviously, turmoil in the tech sector over there with regards to China. So, but these people are a big mainstay between Alipay, and they've got this Ant thing they didn't get off, but at some point they're going to have something going there, maybe, who knows. They're into a lot of different ways to monetize the consumer over there. So bottom line is, you know, it's either a deal where, you know, the whole system is going to change, and then you're going to be having a real problem with some kind of government interference, or this is just a big rainstorm before the sun comes out. If you think it's a big rainstorm before the sun comes out, start pricing out the puts if you want to sell it. And a reverse collar is where you sell the put and you buy a call, which means you take the premium off the put you sell, and then you buy the calls with that money. And then if it starts taking off, you've got a call above to protect the upside, and you've agreed to buy the stock at the strike price, but no credit, because you spent the credit on the call. These strategies obviously are very familiar to us, but if they're not familiar to you, you could email us at optionprofessor@gmail.com with your questions, and we'll try to give you a hand with the answers. As far as what strategy is suitable for you, that's between you, your brokerage firm, and your broker. Okay, so that was Baba. What else can we cover here quickly before we run out of time? Let's go over the bond market. Rates are rising because of why? Because people are concerned about loaning money to the government for 1% while the currency is tanking and inflation is supposed to jump. That's not a good combination. But look, we have not taken out 155 on TLT. And if you don't take out 155 on TLT, then the yields rising story doesn't make sense. So you see 155? If they can't take that out, then put the higher yield story on ice. If they take out 155, then the higher yield story comes right to the front, because you can see if it takes out 155, there's a lot of real estate down here for it to come back down to. Okay, so 155, now we've been saying this for 2 months. If you can't take out 155, don't be betting on a higher yield story. Okay, because again, there's a reason why it hasn't taken out 155. And it could be because the stock market's going to have a big correction and people are going to flee into fixed income. It's possible. Okay, let's look at the US dollar. Dollar index heavily into the euro and the yen. Okay, so the dollar index, everybody and their brother knows that it's been tanking. Okay, well, let me tell you what our position has been on this thing. We thought it had peaked at 104. But this is coming from. We thought it had peaked at 104, and we thought that it broke down at 100. We'll show you those two numbers. Let's go back in a shorter term graph, like in the last 5 years. Yeah. So here you can see that we saw that it broke down. I'm assuming that it blew off at 104. That was in March when everybody was just panicking, right? Okay. Then the Fed comes in. When the Fed comes in, no reason to panic, right? So there you get out of the dollar. And when the Fed tells you they got a printing press in the basement and they're willing to use it, you really get out of the dollar, okay? So the bottom line is you go from 104. Once it could not hold this 101, that was our sell signal right at 100. Can you see the 100? So that's where we got negative on it, and that's where we got bullish on the euro at 110, and the British pound at 120, and the yen at 90, and so on and so forth. The Australian dollar got very bullish at 70. So bottom line is that's where we got the signal. Now, you're getting very oversold down here. And if the stock market is going to have a big correction, you can see the dollar's up today. Tom, Dick, Harry, and every relative of his is short the dollar. So is it possible the dollar has a contrary move here? It's possible. And would that be very surprising to a lot of people? Yes. So be careful about being too negative the dollar here, because it's got this support down here. And again, it's got that, that low that it hit. And again, if we pull it back 20 years, we'll also tell you if it takes this out, people are talking about a 20% drop in the dollar this year. Well, 2090, where we started about, 20% drop in the dollar takes you down to 72. Can you see if it takes out the 85 of the 88 here, then it could drop pretty quickly to 85 and maybe overshoot towards 82. So what people that are negative on the dollar, clearly the thing is rolled over. But you see, sometimes it has a counter rally, okay? And just like here, it had a counter rally, then it came down. But a lot of people are talking about 80 to 85 on the US dollar this year because of heavy printing and because of low interest rates and because of deficits, you know, fiscal and trade deficits. They're going to be enormous. And obviously that's not good for the dollar. You look around the world, those guys are not exactly in the black either. So that's why we have to be somewhat careful. Anyway, be careful of for a dollar, a potential rally, but clearly the overall trend is to the downside. That's the US dollar. Okay, let's turn to these metals because they're going a little nutty today. Let's put it in perspective and we'll tell you how we felt on the metals. Our opinion on gold was as simple as this. Once you broke above 14, that was your buy signal, okay? And then you rallied and went nuts. You see above 14, you had all the lines going up, plus you broke above there, that's your buy signal, 1400. This is a blow off top here at around 2100. Then you come back to the moving average, which is where we told people would be a place to take a bite. So right here, you take a bite and now it's back up here. If we can take out this area here of 1950, 2000, then of course it could go crazy on the upside. But if it can't and the dollar gets stronger, there could be more wood to chop. So be somewhat careful on the metals unless we start breaking out these highs. And again, today's high has been around that 1950 level, right? Today's high, 1940, where are you here? Yeah, it's on the high, 1945. Say 1950, this area here, that high right there is 1963. So 1963 to 2000, this ballpark here, could be where it fails from if the dollar gets stronger and if, you know, the news changes as far as, perceptions on inflation. Because, you know, this many people out of work, you know, maybe inflation isn't the easiest thing to come back. So right now, though, having a big day on the upside. And our entry point for new purchases was right around there. And you can see why. Silver. We thought it was going to be breaking out when it broke above 1920. You'll see that in a second. And we thought 30 was way overdone. You see right above 20, broke above 20. Moving averages are already turned up. So you break above 20, that's your buy signal. And then boom, right to 30. You get this far away from the moving average, it's going to be tough to keep going. Although the silver to gold ratio was ridiculous, way over 100. Let's see what it looks like right now. We know we're at 1950 gold. And we know we're at 2733 on the silver. So where's it at now? 71. You see, when it was above 100, it was a gimme trade. You buy the silver, sell the gold. And that was a great trade. Still now is 71. So, you know, last time gold was at 1900, look where silver was. So is there a lot of real estate to make up on silver? It very well could be. And of course, it's a reopening trade because it's an industrial metal. So again, could be a lot of upside on metal on the silver. And again, the pullback towards 22, 21 was where we thought getting back in made sense, using this as a get out point. So right now it looks pretty good. It did take out the most recent highs. But the 28 to 30 level is really the neighborhood that it has the most trouble. If it breaks through there, then of course you can't fight the tape. And if it takes out 30, it could jam out of here. Because again, this is where it was last time gold was at 1900 back in 2012. Got a little bit of time, so let's go over a couple more medals real quick. Platinum, playing a big game of catch up. Used to be a premium to gold. Now it's a $1,000 discount. But it is also something that could be used in catalytic converters instead of palladium. And palladium is very expensive. So, and it's not doing very good today. So this is a kind of a slow horse, but it could play a big game of catch up at some point because it is 10 times rarer than gold. Let's move over to copper. And when I talk copper, I talk FCX and SCO. And this thing's doing great and has been doing great. Ah, let's go back. And SCO, SCCO, I'm sorry, Southern Peru. Okay. Yeah, you can see this thing has been, the place to be if you like copper. So those are two. But again, they're very extended. They're very extended, you know? So there's always a risk of a big pullback when they get that extended. Let's look at your Bitcoin. We looked through that through ETF called Grayscale. And this is something we were bullish at 5, 10, and 15. That's way up at 30-something now, 35. So, you know, it's a big, it got positive here at 10, then at 15, and then it's been parabolic for the last 3 months. So obviously, is this a little bit of a high point to get in? Of course it is. And is it something, if you didn't own any, you want to dollar cost average, maybe take a little bit there, a little bit there, but whatever money you have here has got to be money that is very speculative, because as you can see, the prices can go crazy in all directions. Things have to 95%, I've been told, 95% of all Bitcoin supplies is being controlled by 2% of the accounts, which are anonymous. That sounds like a very high concentration into a very small amount, and ergo that's why you have bad liquidity. And when you have bad liquidity in something, you can get a short squeeze like you got right now, or it could also go the other way if people dump. So that's why having so much of the Bitcoin, which is good because it's a finite supply compared to gold and fiat currency, but it's not very good compared to the liquidity of the dollar and the liquidity of the metals. And that's why the Bitcoin is a dice roll from that standpoint. But again, can't debate with the result. But look at the graph. You're not early, right? You could be early if it's going to keep. Some people say after the halving year, the thing can go. So there are some people predicting a three bagger on this, which would take it up towards 90. If in fact it has a similar result from the halving that it did back in 2017. Crude oil having some trouble up here, and there's a reason why. You can see the thing right there has got a lot of resistance right here. So crude can go in a back and forth situation as well. Three things that I want to bring to your attention. These are basically grain and soft commodities, which we have been bringing to people's attention as far as keeping an eye on them. And sugar gave us a buy signal at $12.30. And if it can get above 16, we've been telling people, you could accelerate. So where'd we get our buy signal? 12:30. And where is it now? At 15 and change. It blows out 16. Could it get going? Yes. So again, we're constructive on that this year. Another one we're constructive on is the price of coffee. As you see the lines around Starbucks, I guess everyone likes their coffee still. And you can see here that it's down a little bit today, but it's above all the lines. And if it gets above 140, it could get screaming. So there you go. And then finally, something we were positive on since it was $8 a bushel earlier this year, because we knew China was in the backlog trying to buy soybeans on that phase one deal, whatever that was. And let's get to the soybean graph up here so you can take a look. Yeah, we got positive in the $8 range because we didn't think it was going to seven. And we also thought that China would show up. And in the third quarter, they signed a 63% jump in demand. So that sent the prices through the resistance, which was 950 or 10, up towards our target was 12. So when we were looking at it in the 8 area, we thought it would pop. And once it got above 950 there, we thought it would go to 12, which is the former high here. After it hit 12, you see it hit 12 and pulled back. Once it broke above 12, then that's a new buy signal. And so right now we're on a buy signal at 12, but we're up here at a high point of what, 13, 18 or whatever. Okay. So it's a little bit overbought from that point. So maybe it pulls back towards 12 would be a better place to take a shot. But if it really gets going, you can see that there is real estate above. But again, the first buy signal down here, second one was at 12, and certainly has been a very good market for rising prices. So there's three markets that you might not have been aware of. And you can see if there's any ETFs on these things as well, if you want to look at participating in that way, if you were interested in that kind of thing. And let me just do one thing real quick here. Hold on. Oh boy. Okay. Hang on here. Okay. All right, guys. It's the top of the hour. I think we went over quite a bit of information for you today. I've logged out of the charting right now. So at this point, just wanted to let you know that theoptionprofessor.com has a weekly market update that's free of charge. All you need to do, or all your friends and associates need to do, is go to the website, option, O-P-T-I-O-N, professor, P-R-O-F-E-S-S-O-R.com, put in your email, and then every week you'll get a free update on a lot of the stuff that we talked about and a lot of the stuff we hadn't had time to talk about, like how negative real interest rates are going to affect things, about how some of the international ETFs like Latin America and Eastern Europe might be interesting, about how some of the different Chinese stocks might be interesting, and of course, how value versus growth other ways of investing might make sense. So we give you a wide variety of information. It is all free of charge. And again, we certainly would love to have you in the queue. And if you know other investors that would like to get the free information, again, optionprofessor.com, put your email in and you're all set. Also, questions come up and I can't answer them here in this short format. So we can answer your questions by emailing us at optionprofessor@gmail.com. And that might be questions on what we talked about. It might be questions on sectors. It might be questions on ETFs or whatever. And if we can help you with the answer, we will. Of course, we tell you all the time that everything we share with you is our opinion and our observation. And anything to do with actual investing has got to go through your brokerage firm and your broker, because they're best to determine your suitability on doing anything on anything. And so that's what we leave you with that information as well. So again, shoot us an email so you can get into the queue, and shoot us an email with any questions you might have on the stuff that we talked about, or stuff that you have that you might want to talk about as far as questions. Okay. We're at the top of the hour here, so I'm going to turn it back over to David. This is optionprofessor.com signing out, and we'll be talking to you throughout the new year. Have a good and happy new year, and it was great to be with you today.
All right. Thanks. Lots of good info today. So just a quick reminder for everyone, be sure to subscribe to Timing Research on YouTube and your favorite podcast directory. And you can also go to timingresearch.com to get access to the recording of this episode as soon as I can get it posted, as well as any of the past shows or presentations. Just want to thank my guests again for today, the Option Professor at optionprofessor.com. Thanks, everyone.